Hello.
Hi, Linda. It's Andrea from Catalyst for Payment Reform. How are you doing?
Good. Hi, Andrea. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's nice to talk to you again. I know we've had the pleasure of working together a couple of years ago when we were partnering on tracking payment reform in New Jersey and looking at the correlating quality measures, but we have an audience today who may not be familiar with you or the New Jersey Healthcare Quality Institute. So can you take a moment to introduce yourself and your organization?
Sure. So my name is Linda Schwimmer, and I'm the president and CEO of the New Jersey Healthcare Quality Institute. We are a nonprofit based in Princeton, New Jersey, and we're a membership organization as well. We have purchasers, payers, as well as healthcare providers, consumer groups, and others. And together, we work to improve the safety, quality, and affordability of healthcare for everyone. Just a small mission there.
Just a small mission. Well, I know we consider ourselves sister organizations in our big missions to improve the healthcare system. So thanks for joining us. And I mentioned we have done work together on tracking payment reform in New Jersey, but today we're actually talking about a different subject and one that maybe not everyone thinks about all the time, but it's a really important one, which is the quote-unquote health of the small group market and how it is really suffering right now in terms of affordability and its shrinking size and what that actually does to, you know, the overall market. So I thought maybe we could start with you explaining the current status of New Jersey's small group market and why is the Quality Institute and policy leaders concerned about what's happening?
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. Although this is an issue that's in New Jersey, for sure, this is a national issue. We know that this is taking, we are not unique. This is also happening in other parts of the country. And I think it's always really important to think about healthcare coverage and health insurance a little more globally, even though we have different markets and different rules for those markets and different financial supports for those markets. There is fluidity across markets as everyone's looking for insurance for themselves or their employees or their loved ones. And so when one market is suffering, there are implications for the healthcare system as a whole. New Jersey small group market is on the precipice of, unfortunately, a downward spiral. We, at one point at our height, had close to 1 million lives enrolled in the small group market, which, just for the listeners, is typically a market size of, or a group size of 2 to 50 employees. Some states have 100. Ours is up to 50, and we have lost, in terms of covered lives, over 600,000 lives. So our small employer market now is actually smaller for the first time ever than our individual market. And it continues to decline. And I think with COVID now, we don't have the third quarter numbers yet, but we'll probably be lower than 300,000 lives, which is, you know, the lowest it's ever been. So we're very concerned about that. As the market gets smaller and smaller, the risk level of that market, the health of the individuals in the market declines, which then leads to that downward spiral.
Yeah, it's sort of bringing me back to my prior life working on public policy issues at the state level, where it sounds like New Jersey and perhaps other states, as you said, are going into this classic death spiral because those who are leaving the small group market, either voluntarily or not due to affordability or losing their job or things like that, the people who are holding on are those who are likely higher risk, and therefore the prices have to continue to increase to account for that risk. So it's a scary time for those who have to stay in it from a pricing standpoint, and also scary just for the overall health of the insurance market. So you mentioned COVID. You know, what are some of the contributing factors and to this current state, and what is, how is COVID, you know, exacerbating that?
Well, it's a number of different things. First of all, when the ACA, or the Affordable Care Act, was implemented, it changed the rules around who could be in a small employer plan. So a small employer could no longer be just a mom and pop or mother-daughter, you know, kind of group. It had to include, to get to those two or more, a non-related employee. And so a lot of the groups that were once in a small employer market shifted over to the individual market. But that just accounts for a portion of it. The other big issue is cost and the increasing premiums and the lack of satisfactory choices on the small group market, affordable choices. And then the third reason is one that has to do with adverse selection. So as the small employer market was just becoming a less attractive option because of the cost, alternative markets really ramped up their marketing and expanded, at least in New Jersey, but I believe this is the case in other states. So MEWAs, which are multi-employer welfare plans, as well as what's called a risk level-funded at-risk plan. So this is where essentially small employers working with insurance companies and surplus insurance companies create almost like a mini ERISA plan where they are at risk, but they have a surplus lines insurance to support that risk or take over that excess risk. So they're going to these alternative markets. And the reason why that matters is because in the alternative markets, those markets, when they're writing the insurance, can look at things like claims experience, age, you can always look at, but claims experience, gender, things like that. And there's no guarantee reissue, meaning that they don't have to rewrite the policy the next year. They can increase the cost of the policy based on the risk experience. So employers that have healthier employees and a lower risk experience can stay in those less expensive markets that are looking at those things. And then when they have a more expensive claims history, they can pop back in or move back into the small employer market. And this is the exact type of adverse selection that then leads to that small employer market becoming more and more expensive. It's there for everyone when they need it, but then it basically becomes like a high risk pool, which is unsustainable. So that's really, those are the three driving factors. The change in the definition so that people moved into the individual market, just the high cost, and then the growth of these less regulated alternative markets, which are taking care of the healthier groups. And that's really why we're concerned, because without doing something to address this issue, you can see how the story ends. The small group market eventually is no longer there for folks.
Yeah, you can see the end, and it certainly isn't good for those people who are currently in it. And I suppose on one hand, people would say, well, that's great. There's an alternative, less expensive option for these small employers right now. But because there aren't protections year after year to say that, you know, the insurer who's offering those alternatives has to reissue that policy, they can just say no, it's less regulated, and therefore it you know, while it might look good in the short term for those employers, they can be rejected, so to speak, and the next year have to go to the small group market where then prices are continuing to rise. So yeah, that the dynamic is not one, and you know, I guess if you look in the short term, if you're a small employer, you might think you have a good option, but it really is not in the favor of the market as a whole. So I want to make sure that we talk about what kind of solutions you think can address these issues. But before I do that, I know we have quite a bit of a large self-funded audience as well. So how would you say that the effects of the small group market and what's happening in the decline there actually could impact the larger market you talked about, you know, looking at this in other states as well as impacting ERISA? So how do you see it, you know, impacting the ERISA market?
Well, that's a good question. And I think that in the middle of a pandemic, it even puts a finer point on it. We're all very aware of how important having access to healthcare is right now, whether it's testing or treatments or, you know, just taking care of our health. And so we know that having access to healthcare is critical. So people are going to be more employees in particular are going to be more aware of that. In recent years, a lot of large employer plans have put limitations on whether an employee can include their spouse or dependents in their coverage. And if that spouse has access to health care through their job, then they can't do that, or there's a higher cost sharing to do that. As small employers just are unable or don't have access to health insurance for their employees, that will then mean that a lot of those employees will move to either their spouses or their parents' coverage. So that's sort of just like the most obvious answer to the impact. But I think also just thinking about this more globally, a lot of the costs of the system are pushed in particular to larger ERISA plans. And so just the cost of people being uninsured, the cost, the shifting of costs is just something to keep in mind as well. But mostly it's just that people will end up on the ERISA coverage.
That's a really important connection to make those two. Okay, so there is a problem in the small group market, and definitely in New Jersey, certainly in other states. But in New Jersey, tell us about the policy solutions that the Quality Institute and others think can help stave off or try to address this problem in the short term and in the long term.
No, thanks for that question, because I mean, obviously we didn't undertake this work, you know, to just point out the problems. And so we started on this work with many of our members and ended up releasing a white paper a couple months ago. And it listed out a number of regulatory changes that we could make to our market to increase the flexibility of it. I think there were a lot of requirements that were put in our small group market over the past couple decades, which were well-intended consumer protections, but really haven't moved forward in line with the way the ACA regulations have gone. So we just need to loosen certain things. So for instance, we have a 2-to-1 age rating band where we could loosen that to 3-to-1. And I know there's other groups out there, United Healthcare being one, just released a paper advocating for 5-to-1. I don't know if we would recommend going that far, but just looking at age rating, we have a requirement for plans if they want to sell in the small group, they also have to sell in the individual market, vice versa. Really loosening those things up so that plans can sell in either regulated market based on, you know, what's a better fit for their business model. And a lot of things around the actuarial valuations, allowing plans in our market to have a preferred drug list. We don't have formularies in our small group market. So just different strategies that are all discussed with the pros and cons in that white paper to at least think about, because the underlying protections of the small group market is that you, as a consumer, you do have, it's regulated by the state. We have protections from things such as surprise billing. And in those alternative markets, they don't have the same level of regulation. So there's just a lot that can be done just to modernize, I would say, our small group market. But the biggest thing is, at the end of the day, we also want to make sure that we start to look at how, what we're actually paying for and covering, because I think that the essential health benefits that were put in the ACA are a great starting point, but really can't be the end point. And we really need to continue to push the healthcare system to look at how can we be investing more in best evidence care and primary care, and looking at putting the dollars towards the type of care that we know will work, and to start making differentiations in terms of site of care, to allow for things like reference-based pricing, really to make those changes that have been piloted and experimented with in the ERISA market, to allow more flexibility for those types of models in the small group market as well. So we are hoping to see some of that innovation happen in our state and hopefully other states, because I think without really modernizing and having that innovation and those changes, we won't have a small group market within the next 5 years. So people need to start to take a serious look at changing what we're actually purchasing.
Well, I really appreciate you bringing this important issue to our attention. I think as we think about, we all know small businesses in our communities that absent everything you've just talked about related to what's happening in the small group insurance market, we think about how all of these small employers are suffering in some way or another related to the pandemic. And then if you add on the price increases in the small group market for health insurance and the other pressures that those small employers are facing and will face, the time to act seems to be now. So I really appreciate you bringing this important issue to CPR and our audience. You have a white paper with some solutions and the pros and cons to those things, so we'll make sure that our audience has that information, at least for New Jersey, and might give some thought to folks in other states. But thanks for taking the time, Linda, to educate us on this, and I hope you have a great rest of your day. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.